and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. Once again this week, we are going to look at a French crime film. This time, it's Jacques Audiard and his 2001 film, Read My Lips. Returning on the show today to talk about Read My Lips is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. So this was definitely an interesting take on the, like we talked about earlier with Profit, that was an interesting take on the rise and fall of a criminal. This was an interesting take, I felt this film was an interesting take on the Bonnie and Clyde story. And instead of them dying a very over-the-top dramatic death, they get out at the end. It seems that they're in the clear. Spoiler alert.
They don't hurt anybody who is innocent, though. You know, they're not holding up banks. The only people that get hurt are bad guys. So they're more of a, it's almost a reversal of fortune in a way, because you think that he's going to join her world, but instead she joins his, and then he kind of pulls her into his world, even though that wasn't his intent. Meaning he's an ex-con who gets a job at her company.
Yeah, and you do feel that it's sort of a coming of age story for Carla, because you know you see her in the beginning. She's looked down upon by all her coworkers. She doesn't go out a lot. She's she's very lonely. She's seen, I guess, what's the word, mousy. Yeah. And but as the movie goes on, she's stronger. She gets the upper edge on a lot of people in her job by using Vincent Cassel and using other people. And at the end, she uses her talents of reading lips to her advantage. And you see that she's sort of on, she's in love. She's in a relationship. She's definitely stronger and more outgoing than she was in the beginning.
Because her character is deaf, it gives her the opportunity to be invisible, to be somebody who is paying attention to what's going on around her, but nobody can tell that that's happening because they've mentally erased her as somebody important. So they pass by her desk and they leave their coffee cups there for her to throw away. They don't notice when she passes out cold and knocks over a cart, in the office. She's just so nondescript. It's the classic librarian. Then as the movie goes on, she starts wearing shorter skirts and lower cut tops and jewelry, and she just sort of comes into her own, and that sort of classic flowering. It's all, suddenly there's a wardrobe change, and that the character has
changed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the sort of the romance between Vincent Cassel and the character of Carla, and it feels, I guess the best way I can describe it, it feels disturbingly sweet. They're in love. They're both, they both care for each other a lot, and you see that, and they both help each other out in big ways. Even though what they're doing is not the most moral thing in the world, you do want them to get it together and be happy. And when at the end they do, once again, spoiler, but when they do end up happy together, they're together, you feel a bit happy for them. You feel, oh, that's so sweet.
It's sweet, but it's sweet in a kind of threatening way, because Vincent Cassel, of course, is he's an ex-con, so he's a bad boy, and he loves playing that tough guy role, and he's terrific in this. But he also does cruel things. She comes to see him and at the bar where he's paying off a debt to a former person from the past who shows up and wants some money. And she goes to meet him there, and she thinks it's a date. But he wants to drag her upstairs to the roof to say, hey, look what's going on in that window over there, which all of a sudden it starts getting very Hitchcockian with Rear Window. And he knows that she can read lips, and he wants her to use some binoculars and figure out what they're plotting. It's so ridiculous. If you were going to plot some major crime and you were in some room, you certainly wouldn't stand by the window and discuss it while looking outside so someone can read your lips. But it works in the sense that, you suspend the disbelief for the idea of it. But the point is that he's using her and doesn't care how cold it comes across. Mm-hmm. And then there's the scene later where she finds a ticket and realizes he plans to take off with the money without her. So it's not a simple matter of, oh, if only I wasn't a criminal, we could be together and it would all be good. He has a real edge to him. But it's also shown in sort of a chivalrous way when some guys that Carla meets at that bar where she thinks she's supposed to be seeing him, and they attack her, and then he comes out and kicks their butts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting scene. When she does think it's on a date, she's even planning it out, all the conversations she's expecting to have. And she's like, oh, you know, it's like, oh, I know you're a criminal or something. That's okay. And she thinks it's going to happen. And when she finally sees him at the bar, he says, I don't talk to customers.
Right. And she's done all this rehearsal. Yeah. Oh, I guess you go with prostitutes. Oh, is that how it is? And she's, you know, trying on clothes and looking at herself in the mirror. She's rehearsed this. Mm-hmm. But it's for a different play than he has in mind.
Yeah, and you were talking about earlier the whole other story where, you know, she's spying on them and reading their lips in the window. Watching that, you just can't help but think of Alfred Hitchcock, and especially Rear Window.
Right, and it's also like, is there a crime going on over there? What kind of clues can I get to decide whether I think there's a crime, and then what am I going to do about it? So yes, it does have that same sort of idea.
Yeah, and even just like in Rear Window, when they're trying to figure out what exactly he did or if he's really the murderer, it's like in this film, she's like, I think they're talking about this, but I couldn't quite pick up what they were saying about this part. And there is that discussion and unraveling of what exactly they have and how, like, what they can steal.
Right, exactly. Like, now that we know what we think that we know, how are we going to get in there and get it? How are we going to get that money? And how do we figure out where they put it? And it's so interesting what he does with sound in the movie, because since she has hearing aids, from time to time she takes them out, and you get a sense of the quiet cell that she lives in her own head. And I think the tagline on the DVD box that's loneliness is deafening. But he does use the sound kind of coming in and going out, and silence and loneliness together. It's just a really interesting sound design.
Yeah, when I watched it, it's like, wow, this is one of the best examples of use of sound or sound design in any movie. And I believe, looking at the awards, it definitely won this at the Caesar Awards, which is the French equivalent of the Oscars. And it's just so good. I like the one scene at the beginning when she's having to babysit her friend's kid.
Yes, yeah, so I was just thinking of that scene.
Yeah, and it was
a good idea.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's loud, the baby's screaming, but, you know, she, you know, but when she turns off her hearing aids, completely silent, it's just barely noticeable to her, and she's in peace. I do like, and they do that a lot in the movies, where, you know, it's quiet, then she puts the hearing aids on, and then, like, the whole sound
is
different.
The world comes alive.
Yeah, it's like even when she's in the restaurant, and I think it's Cassell Caesar, and this was after he left to go to be the bartender, you know, it's quiet, then she sees him, she puts the hearing aids on, then you hear all the other people talking in the restaurant.
Yeah, it's a great way to sort of introduce the idea of quiet introspective time where you're sitting at a table, no one's talking to you. It could actually be a completely self-contained world. And then all of a sudden, Vincent Cassell shows up and she puts the hearing aids in and joins the ultrasensory world that people have when they can hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, like you say, talked about earlier, Vincent Cassell, I know early in his career, he was always in the French films, always cast as this gangster tough guy. Because I know, I haven't seen it, but the first film he did that was considered big was La Haine.
Yes, and that's one of the movies that we watch in our class. So it's nice to be able to show another Vincent Cassell movie, because he's such a big star. And he's done so much work outside of French film. He was in Black Swan. He played Maestro. He's in the new Jason Bourne movie. He always has a sort of sinister look. He played Shaitan, which is Satan, in a French film. He's just got that sort of reptilian look to him. And yet, even though he looks awful in this movie, he still looks kind of appealing. There's something about his ruggedness, the way he carries himself, that gives him, I don't know, a sense. You just can't stop looking at him.
He's very interesting to look at, especially with that hair and the mustache. You know, you're like, what's up with this guy? You can see, you know, is he a tough guy? Or not even, but with that hair and mustache, he looks like a little bit like, I guess, a nerd or a kind of geeky looking.
Yeah, there's something incongruous about the whole thing. You can't make up your mind whether is he good looking? Is he not good looking? Is he a bad guy? Or is he a nerd?
Yeah. And, like, yeah, especially when I was watching the Jason Bourne movie recently, or even other films he did in America, like Black Swan or Eastern Promises with David Cronenberg.
Derailed.
Yeah, he always, you know, he definitely looks like a guy that could kill a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's an interesting movie, Derailed, with Jennifer Aniston. It's one of those forgotten little Jennifer Aniston movies, but that is a really gripping movie about people not being who they seem they are. And of course, Vincent Cassell plays a total creepy guy, which he does perfectly.
It's a Jennifer Aniston movie, and it's not like a romantic comedy.
It tries to be until you find out that's not the movie that this is. It's got a big twist in it.
Okay. Sounds interesting.
Let's talk about that one.
Maybe, yeah, sure. And, you know, then the other main character of Carla was played by, hope I'm pronouncing this right, Emmanuelle Devos.
Devos, yes. And she's a very big actress in France, and she's done a lot of work. I really like her in this one because she plays down her looks, so she looks like she's really plain. But, you know, with a little makeover, you know, she's just one makeover away from sensational.
And, yeah, she definitely has a great character arc in the story. Like we talked about earlier at the beginning, you know, look where she is in the beginning and look where she is at the end. And, you know, in the end, she's the one that kind of helps him out. She's like, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? Like, I can do this. And, you know, even at the, I love that ending. It's where she takes complete control. She helps get, when he's in that situation, she knows exactly what to do to get him out of there and so they can come out on top.
Well, that, I think, is one of the underlying themes of the movie, is that people are not always what they see. You know, they always say it's the quiet ones that you have to watch. Well, she seems like she's really mousy and not, you know, smart or with it. But all the time she's been working at this company, she has been paying attention, and she knows a lot more than they give her credit for. So when she does sort of come into her own, it is satisfying because you've seen that, oh, she had it in her all along. And she decided, I'm not going to be a victim. And in fact, I can be smart about it.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's, well, when the way she's watching some people reading lips, like when they're, it's a like shot from the side, I can't help but thinking of the way Hal watched Dave and Frank in 2001, when he's reading the lips, when he's figuring out that they're planning to shut him down. And I wonder if she has, like, that cold, cool calculation that Hal had at that time.
It could be, you know, and then there's, you know, they don't really go into how she figures out. It's not just the movement of the lips. It's what makes sense that would come before and after. There's just a lot that has to go into that, which is really kind of interesting. But they just sort of have you accept it as a skill without really going into, you know, what that really means. Vincent Cassell's character, on the other hand, he's a criminal, but when she tries to draw him into the criminal, you know, crime incorporated that she's got going on, he's resistant. You know, don't mess me up. He's like, I'm on parole and, you know, I'm trying to get my life together. And he's kind of dragged into it. So he's not what he seems either.
Yeah, definitely. He seems that, you know, he's, you know, unlike the other character in The Prophet, like once he's out of prison, he's screwed up. You know, he knows he's screwed up. He wants done. He doesn't want to go back.
Yeah, so he's a sympathetic character, even though, like I said, he is sort of feral, he is cruel, but you really wouldn't expect somebody who just got out of prison to be warm and fuzzy either.
So besides these two characters, were there any other standout performances for you in the film?
I like the friend of hers that you love to hate. Really interesting actress, and I can't remember her name, but her eyes are so dark that it's like pupils, like the empath characters on Star Trek Next Generation. Interesting looking character, and so thoughtless. She doesn't care about her friend at all. She just wants to use her.
Yeah, just take care of my kid.
Take care of my kid while I use your apartment to fool around on my husband. Yeah, just a terrible situation, terrible friend. Good performance, though. And I also liked the character of the parole officer until he goes off the rails.
Yeah, the whole point of the parole officer and his missing wife and that whole side story was really lost on me. I mean, once again, it's a good film. I don't want to go too, like, poo-poo on it, like I saying I hate it or it sucks. Definitely not that. But however, this felt very unnecessary to me. It didn't really go anywhere, and I just didn't get where they were coming with that. It goes back to Vincent Cassell and Carla, and they're trying to, you know, with their story, and then it cuts back to, oh, I'm missing my wife, she hasn't come back, she goes missing a lot, and I know he's the parole officer for Vincent Cassell, but I just, where was it going with that? Did you pick up on that at all?
I'm with you on that completely, and I think it was meant to be another example of people aren't who they think that you think they are, because he is a parole officer. He's, you know, officer of the law, you know, you would think an upstanding citizen. And in the beginning of the movie, he provides those scenes where, you know, he's sitting across from the desk from Vincent Cassell's character of Paul, who was telling him about, you know, well, here's the job opportunities and, you know, how's it going? You know, you have to have that sort of scene. And he seems like a really sympathetic character. He also shows up at work to check on Vincent Cassell. So he seems like a, again, we come back to this father-son sort of dynamic that Edouard likes. But I think it, I don't think he knew what to do with it after he set those scenes, and he should have just left the rest of it off.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he was just trying, yeah, like you said, you're trying to show that, you know, usually the parole officers are the people who always have it together. They're the ones that have to keep it together to make sure that the people they're working with, you know, don't go back to prison. And maybe it's since it's the fact that he has all these, you know, demons about him missing his wife and, you know, he's such in a stupor that, you know, he wanders around the house in his underwear, that maybe it shows that he's not keeping it together. Like, he might not would have been able to help Vincent Cassell if he asked for him.
You know, I never took that for confusion. I thought it was deliberate misdirection, that he was really just incredibly venal and killed his wife in cold blood. Much worse of a crime than Vincent Cassell apparently did, because he just did burglary. So he's a much bigger criminal. And I think he knew it, and I think he knew he had to plant all of the right clues to misdirect, like go to see his sister-in-law and say, you know, have you seen her? I know she comes to stay with you sometimes and doesn't tell me. He knew where she was. And when the police come, he's, you know, he's sort of cagey with them, and you're kind of getting the impression from the movie that, wow, he's worse than the worst. But yeah, you're right, when it gets to the end and he's just sort of floating away in music and laying on the couch in his wife beater and his underwear, it's like, why? And they kind of end the movie with seeing him, you know, taken away as the two leads are getting away in the getaway car.
Yeah.
But it really, it's a strange place to end, because he's trying to say something and I was like, what was that last thing you wanted to tell me? What could he possibly tell him?
Yeah, well, he was actually not talking about him. I think he was once again talking about his wife again.
But it's strange to have, you know, them sort of be like, what's the message here? You don't even find out what it is. But you also aren't expecting the parole officer at that point to have anything to tell him. It's a very strange scene.
Yeah, I guess it's going back. I would have just cut all that story, that side story out, just have him in the movie, have a movie as this parole officer, have him serve some purpose, but just, yeah, it's very confusing. And I kept, and even when, like, it was not doing that, and I was thinking, like, so I was trying to figure that plot, I was like, so what was the point of that? Is it going to tie into this? And it just never did.
No, and the strange thing is they made the parole officer seem human and likable in the beginning, so you weren't sure whether you were supposed to like him at the end, or if you were supposed to feel betrayed because he was such a bad person after all. But he's such a minor character, he had way too much screen time.
Yeah, and I didn't even actually pick up until a little bit later that he actually killed his wife. It took me a while to figure, I was like, oh, he did, because I always just thought he was just looking for it and she was actually missing.
No, she was actually gone. I think she was in the basement.
Once again, picking up on the Hitchcock element, him being a Thorwald.
Absolutely, and, you know, there's always something sinister going on in that basement.
So, it was interesting. There were a few times, like one thing I picked up, because I watched this right after I watched A Prophet, and I talked about that spotlight lens in A Prophet, and then there's that spotlight lens in this movie, too. It's like when, this is a couple of scenes when it's usually working with that sound, when she's either taking the earbud out or putting it in, it kind of shows that spotlight lens again, so I felt that that was a similar theme he's using in this movie, too.
Right, to give you a sense of disorientation, like you're dropping into another world. Yeah, I thought that's how he used it, too.
Yeah, and then, like, somebody, you know, he used it to also very jarring, because, you know, you see her one time in the club with these two guys when, you know, she's dressing up a little bit more, and then, you know, cut right, no lead up to that, just cutting right next to the scene, she's in the car and crying, and you realize these two guys are attacking her.
Right, and she doesn't have her hearing aids in, so this all this muffled sound and confusion, you understand exactly what's going on. But it's actually merciful that they've turned the sound off, because you don't really want to hear it, and you want it to be over really quickly. And then all of a sudden, Vincent Cassell shows up, drags them out, kicking them outside the car, and then she puts the hearing aids back in. And it's interesting, you know, why she wouldn't have them in for the two strangers that were... she was partying with. But she, you know, the minute Vincent Cassell shows up, she's like fully in the world.
Yeah, it's, you know, when it was originally she's being attacked, it's disorienting, the sound's muffled. But once Vincent Cassell's in, beats them up and, you know, saves her, it's like she puts the sound back in. It feels like order is being restored.
But then again, you see him comforting her in the car. He's got his arm around her and he's patting, you know, he's just going to be okay, it's going to be okay. And then he's like, are you okay? And she thinks he's being sympathetic, like, it's been a terrible ordeal, you know, let me take you home or whatever. No, he wants to know if she's still good to go back up on the roof.
You're still good, right?
Right. Yeah. Get back to work.
And so when we were talking a little bit about the parole officer and everything, it feels like just like Rear Window, going back to the Hitchcockian theme of this film, is that there's a theme of relationships. You know, there's the failed marriages, like the one with the parole officer, but also the failed marriage for Annie and just how bad that's going. Do you feel that, once again, that's sort of prophesizing where the relationship of Vincent Cassell and Carla could end up in?
Well, that's a very cynical look, but you could be right, because there's also the club owner whose wife knows that he's fooling around on her, who Vincent Cassell has to try to drive home, and she throws up on his jacket and everything. So there's that. It's not only that all the relationships seem doomed. He has to deal with them in the most disgusting ways possible. You know, taking care of somebody else's situation for them and literally being thrown up on. Or having to go outside and pull some thugs off of some friend of his and beat them up. You know, he's constantly being dragged into these situations where he has to
get his hands dirty.
Yes. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
And so I was wondering, where do you see the fates of the two characters ending up? Do you feel that it's a happy ending for them? They spend the rest of their life together? Or do you feel that it won't last? Either A, they'll get too carried away with their crimes and do something that, you know, they won't be able to get away with? Or do you feel that eventually they're just too much of polar opposites and they'll eventually break up?
I hope they take that money and they go off somewhere and start anew. I mean, I always want a happy ending. But the characters, what would be interesting though is then who's in charge? Because when they meet, he's working for her. And even when they start doing the crimes with the company, you know, he's working for her. But then when it turns to the bar and they find out that, you know, they're skimming some money and there's a big bag of money to be had, he's in charge. And then he thinks he's going to take the money and run, but she's on to him, so then she's in charge. So the interesting question, I think, is what life they have afterwards and who directs what that's going to be. She seems like the brains of the group.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it could be a battle of wits between them. Like, I want to take control. No, I'm going to take control.
The good thing, though, is he has demonstrated that he can let her take control, so maybe it'll work out.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully. And so how did this film get received in France? I know it was big received. It won 3 César Awards. One was for Best Sound Design, like we talked about, but also Emmanuelle Devos won Best Actress. So this film was big in France?
It was big in France, and she's big in France, and Vincent Cassell is big in France. So this would have been like, even though it really wasn't very romantic, but this would be like a rom-com with known actors here. Not everybody likes that kind of movie. But for all the people who do like it, they all went to see it.
And so did this film help put either Cassell or Emmanuelle Devos or Audiard on the map? Was this like their first big hits or just something that propelled them, like, say, internationally?
I think that Vincent Cassell was already well known. You mentioned La Haine, where he plays a thug. It seems to be like a theme with him. That really put him on the map. He started having success immediately after that movie. So this is just one in a string of hits for him. And Emmanuelle Devos is done many things, very successful and well-regarded. As far as the director, I think this was probably one of the first films he made that really got a lot of people watching it and talking about it. He's made other movies before, but I think this was where it actually started happening for him.
Mm-hmm. And so are there other, whether French films, not necessarily by Odiard, but just any other director, what other French films would you say are similar to this film with that Bonnie and Clyde relationship, or just that use of, you know, somebody who is sort of like Carla, where they're either not what you think they are at the beginning, then at the end?
You know, there is a Vincent Cassel movie that he did with his wife, his then wife, Monica Bellucci. And the name of the movie escapes me, but
Is it Irreversible?
Yes. But that is so far to the other extreme. It's just so sensual and sexy and violent and strange.
Yeah.
This is more of an intellectual movie. I think that's what I like about it. A lot of what is happening between Carla and Paul is mental. And I think that's it's interesting to have something that makes you think about what they're doing. You know, like, how do you read those lips? And how do you fill in when you don't have the words? And how do you figure all that out? It's a good puzzle, a good crime puzzle movie.
Okay. And so, I know in our earlier show when we did A Prophet, we were talking about films, you know, films of his that were big. So now, is there anything new that he's working on that's going to come out, say, like next year, or anything new he's working on?
I'm sure he's working on something even as we speak, but the last movie that he had out was a movie called Deepan, and I'm interested in seeing it because it's set in Sri Lanka. I say interesting to see it, and I want to see it because it doesn't sound like anything else he's ever done. But I like his take on things, and I love the way he works with dialogue. So it's in my Netflix queue, and as soon as it bubbles up, I will see it.
So then I'll just lead into my last question.
One other quote. One of the things that was like a tagline for this movie was, she taught him good manners, he taught her bad ones. So that's a good way to leave the idea that, again, people aren't what they seem.
Okay. So, once again, last question I'll have is just once again, tell us about the, I'm sure you're getting tired of this question already, but tell us about the French film course, and then maybe just how you would bring this film into it.
I have used this film in my world cinema class. When I'm trying to pick something that represents a good French movie, I have used this. It succeeds in the crime story. I'm not sure it succeeds in all respects, because I do think the character of the parole officer is a real problem, because my students are always confused by, like, what was the point of that? And by the end of the film, you know, when they've identified him as a criminal, they can't remember that he was the parole officer. He wasn't important enough to remember. Mm-hmm. So it's like, who's this random guy at the end, and what does he have to do with anything? But this movie I will show in the French film class, because we can compare it with other things Odiard has done and discuss the common themes that he has. And I think it's a pretty good film in terms of Vincent Cassel. And it's always great to be able to introduce students to actors who are currently working, because they're going to see him in other things.
Yeah, I would definitely put, a grade-wise, I put this film like BB+. But if it wasn't for that parole officer, I keep confusing with the landlord for some reason, but if it wasn't for the parole officer, I probably would put it in the A's, but that brings it down a bit.
It does. You know, we should edit it ourselves and recut it. Yeah. I wonder what the director's cut would look like.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at armchairdirectors.podomatic.com. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm Alex Baker, saying the idea is to leave here a little smarter.